Notice, this program includes violent acts and mature language. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Dr. Marvin Dunn, and I am the storyteller. Our story today, Jim Crow, with the assistance of my brother, Dr. Raymond Dunn, and technical assistance from my nephew, Raymond Dunn, Jr.
Bro, thanks a lot for that introduction, and I'm looking forward to learning more about Jim Crow, something that I've lived with for most of my life. So, bro, tell us, what is Jim Crow?
Well, let's start with who was Jim Crow.
Well, good. Tell us that.
There was, even during slavery, before the Civil War, there was this white man, I don't remember his name, it's not important, who dressed up in blackface and went around with these raggedy clothes on, pretending to be a black clown. And white people loved it. And he started attracting folks to his shows. He'd go around the South, and the role he took on was called Jim Crow. The purpose of the role was to make white people laugh at black people. And this is how the whole minstrel industry started, from this person making a lot of money going around being Jim Crow. Now, the first minstrels who started mimicking this guy were white people, white men,
right,
who would paint themselves.
Amos and Andy, for example.
Well, that comes a little later.
Okay.
A little bit later. But my point is that you had minstrel shows like Silas Green.
Right.
Silas Green was a minstrel show that traveled around the South. We saw it.
I'm going to Silas Green.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They were basically making fun of black people. We're talking now 1940s when you and I were boys and we saw this in Volusia County as we were growing up. We were sitting there laughing at ourselves.
Exactly. They were talking about us. They were imitating us and we were laughing.
Exactly. It was bumbling, stereotypic performances, just cracked black people up. So that was a time when we were, as a people, not ourselves. We came out of that, thank God. But that's how Jim Crow evolved. Now, from that character then came in all the southern states a series of laws that came to be known as Jim Crow laws. Mm-hmm. These were laws that were passed, Florida had as many as any other states, that required the physical separation of black people and white people. The whole purpose of the Jim Crow laws was to not have white and black people in the same physical space, at least at the same time.
Okay. Let me try and share with our audience some examples of Jim Crow laws, and you set me straight if I'm wrong.
Okay.
White only water fountains.
You could get arrested for using a white water fountain.
What about stepping aside on the sidewalk when a white person is approaching?
That was a custom. You wouldn't get arrested for that. You'd get killed for it. But there was no law that said you had to step aside when a white person walked by.
Okay. So these Jim Crow laws were actually, they guided the black behavior, right? We knew that we couldn't do certain things.
Correct.
We had our minds, our brains conditioned by acts like Silas Green, showing how black people are. We actually thought, bro, that these people were right. That went into the movies also. Now, what was this black actor's name? The guy?
Stepping Fit. Again, the whole, see, listen, there has been in this country, not just in the South, mm-hmm. an industry of making fun of black people.
Exactly.
Have you seen some of these racist postcards that go around? There was a whole series of them in Miami that show alligators eating black babies or chasing black men. The point I'm trying to make is that in this country, in the South in particular, black people have been the object of ridicule and dehumanization during that period.
Right.
And then so these laws come about, and then you could get arrested if you violated these Jim Crow laws. But the lawful aspect of it then came into rules that separated schools. Black kids and white kids mm-hmm. could go to the same schools that required mm-hmm. black people to sit in the back of the bus.
Right.
You and I saw signs on buses when we were boys.
Of course.
That said, colored seat from rear.
I remember going to the Greyhound bus station when our brother Bill first went to Grambling College, and our mom reminded him, okay, Bill, when you get on the bus, go to the back.
Don't you know that mom and dad did the same thing to me when I'm at the Morehouse?
Oh, yeah.
September 1957, because of Jim Crow laws?
Sit in the back of the bus. So, bro, what laws eventually got passed to help get us beyond this Jim Crow era?
I think really the beginning of the end of Jim Crow happened in the military.
Okay.
When Truman issued an executive order requiring the military to become desegregated. Now, mind you, there was pressure for Roosevelt to remove Jim Crow from the military. At that time, black people served in separate units in all the services. And, of course, in the Navy, they had a very subservient role that blacks played, which was basically being servants to white officers and what have you. So Roosevelt was hesitant to change that. But Truman comes in, realizing that black men and women had fought and died for their country in World War II, he ordered that the military be desegregated. And so it was. The most resistant branch was the Navy. The Navy said white sailors will never sleep in the same berth with black sailors. We will have mutiny on the ships. Just won't work. You can't force black and white people to be that close together.
What happened?
Nothing. Truman ordered it, and the military complied. See, the important thing about that, Ray, is that it set the example for the country to see that when integration is forced by a single act by an authority, the sky doesn't fall.
Yeah, things can change.
Things can change, and so they did.
So what law changed it for the rest of us outside of the military?
Well, there was a series of challenges to Jim Crow. Let's talk about Irene Morgan.
Okay.
People know about Rosa Parks.
Mm-hmm.
Irene Morgan was a black woman who was the other Rosa Parks, and she was before Rosa Parks.
Okay.
And she has not gotten the historical credit that Morgan should have. Irene Morgan was a defense worker, and she was riding the bus between Virginia and Maryland. When the bus crossed over to Virginia, she had to move into the black section of the bus, and she refused, and she got arrested. Now, she didn't have the NAACP behind her as Rosa Parks did. Irene Morgan got herself a lawyer and challenged this. And basically, she won. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the court ruled that requiring segregation of passenger buses was unconstitutional. Actually, they ruled that it violated interstate commerce law.
Right.
Therefore, it could not be enforced. So what this meant, had this not been done, what this would have meant was that when a bus crossed from a northern state into a southern state, you had to get up and move if you were black to the back of the bus. And the court saw that as unreasonable. And so Irene Morgan won the decision in the Supreme Court that you could not enforce this kind of behavior on interstate travel between states.
Okay.
What Rosa Parks did was challenged, well, can they do that within the state?
Right, with the local bus.
Yeah, right, because the state required me to sit in the back of the bus. And, of course, we know the result of her activism, and that really changed that practice in Southern life. But Irene Morgan, who's born in, I think, 1907, she just died in 2007, was an important person in black history that needs recognition much more than she's gotten.
Okay, so was that the court case that solved that, the Plaza case?
Actually, Brown versus Board of Education.
Okay.
Had a much greater impact because that was the Supreme Court case that made illegal the separation of races in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to that, though, let me talk a little bit about Plessy versus Ferguson.
Okay.
Which was a case that made it legal to have separate schools, separate facilities, that made Jim Crow legal. So this happened in 1896 when a black man named Homer Plessy, who looked white, this was in New Orleans. Plessy gets on to what he knew was the white coach. Now, folks knew he was white. I mean, he was black. He was a known figure. But he gets under the white coach, and he gets arrested. And that case goes all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the Supreme Court ruled in Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896 that as long as the facilities for white and black people were the same, then it's legal. It's not a breach of the Constitution as long as you have separate but equal facilities.
Exactly.
Right. Sounds great, right? Incidentally, seven out of the justices agreed to that. Only one dissented. But that became law. As long as it's separate but equal, then it's okay. So this really got broken down when we got to the Brown case in 1954,
okay,
when the segregation of children in public schools was ruled illegal by the Supreme Court.
Okay. So now we're talking about school children and the integration of schools across this country. Yeah.
Yes. Before we move forward, though, Ray, let me make the point that just because the Brown decision in 1954 was announced by the Supreme Court, the states didn't enforce it. Just as Irene Morgan won that decision in Virginia, it still wasn't enforced. So just because the law gets passed that black kids and white kids can no longer be segregated in schools, it didn't mean that the states did anything, at least not right away. It was years before there was any movement towards desegregation, right, despite the Brown decision in 1954.
I think a part of that is because we were brainwashed to continue to sit in the back of the bus, to continue to expect those kinds of things.
Well, I'm sure that there were folks who, I know that there are folks who sat on the back of the bus after the time that that was required had passed. People just didn't want to put themselves in into a situation. But no, we're talking now about into the 1950s and the pre-civil rights era. And I don't think at that time that the black population of the country was brainwashed. I think they were primed for change.
Let's talk about the 1950s and the changes. Tell our audience about Bunch Park. Give us some history. No, seriously, we're at that point, 1951.
Sure, all right. Bunch Park is a black housing settlement in Opa-locka, Florida, into which our family moved in 1951 from Central Florida. These were homes that were built by the federal government, guaranteeing the financing, for black veterans. At the same time, now, they were building separate housing developments for white veterans. So we're now talking about the tail end of Jim Crow, when the federal government was in the final throes of supporting separate but allegedly equal facilities. In this case, the house in which we grew up was basically a result of Plessy versus Ferguson.
I mean, as children, we didn't know that. But I clearly recall that we were not allowed to go across 27th Avenue because that was the white section. But let's move forward. Talk to me about, we're still closing out in the late 50s. Now, what about your bus ride to Atlanta?
1957?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Ray, there were three times in my life that I can remember that I was called a nigger by a white person.
Mm-hmm.
And that bus ride was one. I was 17 years old. I just finished high school. My mom and pop took me down to the Greyhound bus station this September 1957, put me on the back of the bus, as they would do you later.
Right.
Left. And gave me my little brown bag lunch and told me, stay behind on the back of this bus until you get to Atlanta. This was a Sunday night. So I sat on the back of the bus and kissed mom, and I think our grandmother was there too. And the bus takes off. And Ray, I think the bus got to Fort Lauderdale when I moved off the back seat into the middle of the bus. I didn't go all the way up front. I wasn't crazy, but I sat in the middle of the bus. And it felt better. Same bus, but once I got off that back seat and moved my behind up to the middle of that bus, it was an easier ride until the next morning. The next morning, that bus had crossed into Valdosta, Georgia. And some white school kids got on that bus. They were using the Greyhound bus as a school bus. So these kids got on there chattering and talking, and this little white girl sat down right next to me. By this time, that white people have gotten on the bus, and they're behind me. And the black folks sitting on the very, very back seat who were saying, You could hear a pin drop when that child sat down next to me. I had never been that close to a white person. And finally, a white guy says, nigga, get up. You know you don't have any business up here. This is my first time away from home. I'm 17 years old. First time away from home. And I was scared. And other people started chiming in. This isn't the North, you know. You don't know where you belong, boy. And a white man, young man, a Marine who was in uniform, stood up and said, why are y'all picking on him? He's not doing anything. And as soon as he spoke up to protect me, they forgot about me and turned on him. Mm. You must be a Jew. You must be a nigger lover. You must be from the North. So we're outside of Waycross. This man pulls the bus over to a gas station, walks back, and he points to me and says, you are creating a disturbance on this bus. I'm putting you off. That man gave me my little cardboard suitcase and left my behind at the gas station and said, wait for the next Greyhound bus to Atlanta, which I did. Came by about 3 or 4 hours later, and I boarded that bus and went on to Atlanta. Don't ask me which seat I took.
I will not ask that question.
Right outside the bathroom.
Right outside. Okay. Moving right along. Yeah. Very interesting stories. Let's talk about today. Bro, do you see any vestiges of Jim Crow still hanging around today.
No, there are no laws today that will lead to your arrest if you are in the vicinity of a white person. No, Jim Crow is dead. The civil rights movement killed him. It didn't kill prejudice.
Are you sure of that?
We don't have a country now where you can make a law based on race that discriminates against one color or another. That's okay. A reality of where we live.
Okay.
Even the nine folks who serve on the Supreme Court, I think, would agree with that.
All right.
What has not changed as much as needs to change is attitude and racism, outright racism on the part of, I think, a minority of the white population. But it's alive and well in our society, and we have yet to challenge that. My hope is that young people, once they know how far back we have been, how far off track we have been as we have evolved as a country, as a nation, that they will pick the mantle up and realize that we can be better and we are better than we have been.
You know, that's a good place to try and wrap this up. But what I would like to end with is give me your opinion of what's next.
That's a good question.
What's next?
What is next, Ray, is that America is going brown. Our country in 20 years, 30 the most, most people who live here in 30 years will be people who have black or brown racial connections genetically. We will be a racially mixed nation. We already are, but it will be less visible as we move forward through the next two or three generations. Time will solve this problem. Race is getting to know each other better, being in common spaces, enjoying each other's company, growing together will make the difference. And I see young people today doing that. I don't see them acting or reflecting feelings of the sort that we've been talking about in this program.
I agree with you, except I do see some of that today. I can't help but think of the march, Jews will not replace us. There is some of that still out there.
No, listen, Raymond, there will always be racists amidst us. There will always be Nazis. There will always be these people who are dangerous. They will never be eradicated. Thank God it is a minority part of the population. Listen, even the Klan has never had the majority of American people behind it.
Okay.
These are fringe groups. We have such a plethora of them right now that it's difficult to see, tell what's real and what's not. But there's nothing that I'm more confident of other than that these kinds of outright, blatantly racist Jews will not replace us. That is a minority part of the white population in our country.
I appreciate your sharing with us. And let's all remember that we need to know our past in order to build a solid future. And Jim Crow is a part of our past. We thank you for listening to The Storyteller, a production of MR2D Media. This and other stories are available at donehistory.com, tbeunfiltered.com, or in print, Black Miami in the 20th Century by Dr. Marvin Dunn.